Blog Talk Radio.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and no flame die? For all anxiety, my dear, for all anxiety, we'll take a cup of kindness yet for all anxiety, for all anxiety.
Delicious, the host of Delicious Talk. We were gone on vacation for the month of December, but now we're back. And tonight we're going to recap 2011. I'm going to bring my co-host in, Rhea.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Fantastic. How was your New Year's and your little holidays and everything?
It was nice and restful. It was well needed.
Yeah, I know that. You know, we definitely needed a break, you know. So we're back and, you know, we're going to recap 2011, the best and the worst of it, you know, because some of it was kind of bad, some of it was kind of good. So we're just going to, you know, recap it and, you know, keep it moving. First want to talk about the people that are no longer with us since 2011. And I want to start off with my GYN. That's my doctor, Dr. Edward Oliver. And it's so strange. I just found out a couple of nights ago that he died July the 4th of 2011. And I was just mortified. I really could not believe it. And I'm still, you know, it's still running through my mind, you know, is he gone, you know, even though I know he is, but, you know, it's just kind of hard for me to grasp that he's gone, because it just seems like people that I, you know, maybe grew up with, went to school with, or, you know, had some type of association with through my life, they're just dying, you know, so, Rhea, I'm going to start off by saying I love you, because tomorrow's not promised to neither one of us, you know, but I really want you to know that, and I appreciate you, and, you know, I'm just so, this thing called life is really something, you know, when it comes to an end, but, you know, that's a part of life. We all are going to die one day, you know, but when you see your friends and family members and people you truly love, you know, pass on, it's really, you know, it's kind of hard for the people that are left behind, because they've gone and they're no longer suffering or going through the trials and the tribulations that we're going through. So, you know, we're left here, we're still suffering, you know, missing our loved ones.
And then it also makes us visit our own mortality. When you get to the point where you see those before you passing away, your life passes before you as well. I know my mom died in 2007, and that thrust me in the role of quote-unquote head of our family, and it was a role that I do not want, and it was a role that I did not take lightly. I mean, did not take easily, and I remember planning for her funeral, and I swear to you, my six siblings turned into infants.
Wow.
It was like, oh, my God. They had to run everything past me. I had to prove everything. I had to do, and it's like, and everybody kept coming to me. And at her funeral, Precious Lord was one of her songs, and so when they were singing that, it touched me, and I got up and ran out to church. Mm. And all I could say think was, I can't do this. I can't, you know. And I remember coming home that night and eating my first meal for the day, and just sitting down thinking about it. And then about a week or so later, my then 18-year-old, it was September, so he was 17 still. He was 17. Somebody, they were coming to me and they were calling me and asking me, and it's like, you know what, y'all need to stop. And he looked at me. I was standing in the kitchen cooking, and he turned around and he said, you know what, you're going to have to man up. And I said, excuse me? He said, you're the matriarch of this family now, whether you want it or not. You need to man up, and you need to take your role. You don't have a choice.
Wow.
You know, that's your responsibility. That's your obligation. Ain't that what you raised us to? And he just went in on me. And I'm sitting there like, I cannot believe he said me. You know, and I just looked at him for a while, and then I just stopped complaining. Because in so many ways, he was true. But at that time, I'm trying to grieve at the same time.
Right.
While you're trying to take care of all of them. So you do look at your own mortality. And you look at the fact that, you know, I'm 49. My mother was 67. And I sit back there and I say, you know, you don't know, bar natural causes, you don't know when life is going to, any given day you walk out.
Yeah.
That could be the end of it for you.
That's true.
And ever since then, well, for the last year, I just noticed that whenever my 21 is your that then 17 is now 21. And whenever he's home, because he's at University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, whenever he's home, every time he walks out of my front door, he hugs me and says, you know, bye, you know, by. And
right.
He says that because I think that done finally set in. But unfortunately, he has buried over half, not he has buried, but he has been to the funeral over half of the guys he went to school with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm sure he's looking at his own too. And it's, but it makes you visit your own mortality, and you see it more and more and more, and that's one of the reasons why. And your GYN, as I told you the other day,
mm-hmm.
he was young.
Yes, yes, he
was
53. Yes,
yeah. I mean, you know, and I know I'm stuck on stupid when it comes to, because I keep saying that. He's too young to have a heart attack. I know somebody who dropped dead at 37 from one.
Wow.
And I'm like, that was a baby compared to, you know what I'm saying? When we
right.
It's like, I know you have to get out of that because things have changed because of our diets, and primarily because of our diets and because of what they're putting in foods and things such as that. What used to be an older person's body is now on younger people. Because of what we're eating and things like that, but yeah.
Right, right. It's the lifestyle and the environment that we're in now.
Exactly.
Right, because, you know, and when you think of a doctor dying, you say to yourself, well, why wasn't they taking care of themselves?
Exactly.
Or was they taking
exactly.
care of themselves? You know, you really
exactly.
don't know, because when I last saw him was last year in 2010, because I go to him every year for, you know, my annual checkup. And, you know, he was looking well. We laughed and we joked and, you know, he examined me and I said, you know, I'll see you next year, meaning this year. And
mm-hmm.
lo and behold, oh, my good, I just, that night when my girlfriend told me that she had found, because I was really dumbfounded when I was calling his office, they were saying, like, the number was disconnected. And I'm saying, what is this doctor's office number doing being disconnected? So I'm thinking maybe he had moved, but, you know, why didn't I get a notice? And
mm-hmm.
then, you know, I'm just still not satisfied with that. I called the information. She said, I have no listing for Dr. Edward Oliver. I said, are you sure? In Hinesville, she said, ma'am, there's no listing for him. So I'm saying, what in the world, did he leave town? You know, because
mm-hmm.
being dead was the last. That thought never even crossed my mind about
exactly.
him being dead. So I called my girlfriend, you know, who worked at the Washington Hospital Center with me. That's where I had met Dr. Oliver at. And I have to look in the database and see if she could locate him. So she's looking. She didn't see anything. So then she Googled. And this obituary comes up, and she's reading it. And so I said, Dr. Edward Oliver. So she said, she asked him, did he have a thick mustache? And when I last saw him last year, he didn't have a thick mustache. So I couldn't see the picture, you know, because I was
okay.
in the bed. And when she said a thick, so I said, are you sure, Dr. Oliver? Hi, so she read the address and everything. So I got out the bed, ran in my office, pulled him up on the internet, and almost passed out when I saw his picture. And then the most hurting part of it was that he died July the 4th of 2011. You know, and it just like I'm still reeling from that, you know. And he was just such a very kind and, you know, passionate, understanding doctor. His bedside manner was the way doctors should be, because when you went to him, he explained things to you. He broke things down to you, made sure you understood anything that he said to you in his office, opposed to when you go see these doctors, they'll take out their stethoscope, listen to your heart, hit you on the knee, look down your throat, and give you a couple of pills, or just say, well, I'll see you in a couple of weeks. You know, he wasn't like that. He would, you know, break things down to you, because when I went to him to get my IUD removed, and he told me that I had some fibroids, he showed me the pictures of them and told me it wasn't really anything to worry about at this particular time because they were small, but, you know, if anything should arise, then, you know, he would look into it. But he didn't see any problems, that, you know, that I would have any problems with them. And yeah, so that's and Dr. Edward Oliver is also a character in my second book, you know, because I had even taken him a couple of the books, and I told him, you know, I was going to give him the books. He said, no, I'm going to buy these books from you because this is, you know, I'm going to support you. You know, he said, that's what I want to do. You can't be giving all your books away, you know. So he bought them. He wrote me a check for them. And I said, I was going to put you in the first. I said, I wanted to put you in my first book. So he said, well, you could have done that. I said, well, I didn't want to do it without first asking. He said, well, you can do that. So my second book, which is a sequel to my fourth book, which is a sequel to my first book, he's in that book. Another, my first guy at GYN that I had, he's in that book. He died back in, I think, the 80s, I think. But he was an excellent GYN as well. And he's dead. And a couple of other characters in my book who are dead, you know, but I use one of the characters' real name in my last book. And, you know, like I said, he's dead. Another character whose name I didn't use, she's dead, but she and the character that's dead, they were the only ones who knew who they were in my books because, my, okay, you know, my books are based on true events and true characters. But, you know, it's really something, you know, and makes you really stop and think, you know, don't take anything for granted. Don't take anything for granted because, you know, you may not be here tomorrow to, you know, do it again. If you're going to do something, do it, get it over with, you know, and that's basically how I'm going to be living my life. Just, you know, whatever it is I'm setting out to do, I'm going to do it and get it done because, you know, bad as I don't want to think about me not waking up tomorrow morning or the morning after that, you know, if I don't, then, you know, at least I can say I did do some of the things that I set out to do, you know. So, yeah, so I'm going to go over a few of the deaths that we lost in 2007. We lost Nick Ashford, August the 22nd. Amy Winehouser, July the 23rd. She was 27. Nick Ashford was 70. Heavy D, Dwight Arrington Myers was his real name. He was November the 8th. He was 44. And Bob Barker, I really don't remember the date that Bob Barker died, but he died in 2007.
Oh, I didn't realize he did.
Was Bob Barker is what I have down here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but it's down here. Then Elizabeth Taylor, Leslie Nelson, Joe Frazier, November the 7th, he was 67. That's young, too. Andy Rooney, Vesta Williams, she died September the 22nd. She was only 53.
Mm-hmm.
Bubba Smith, remember Bubba Smith?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was 66. He died August the 3rd. Peter Falk, he died June 23rd. Clarence Clemens, he played the saxophone in the Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band. He died June 18th. He was 69. Clarice Taylor, remember the Huxtables that Bill Cosby played on?
Mm-hmm.
And the grandmother?
Oh, okay.
She died May the 30th. Huh?
His mother or her mother?
I think it was his
mother. His
mother,
probably. Okay.
I think it was.
Yeah.
She died May the 30th. She was 93.
Okay.
Yeah, she had a full life, yeah. Then Gil Scott-Heron, he died May the 27th. He was 62. He's the one who made that song, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. Mm-hmm. Macho Man Randy Savage, the wrestler, he died. They said he was in a car accident, but that wasn't the cause of his death. He had a heart attack. Rapper M-Bone, that's the guy who teach me how to Dougie, was in that little group. He died in a drive-by. Phoebe Snow, she died April 26th. She was 60. Nate Dogg, March the 15th. He was 41. Sylvia Robinson, September. She was 75. That's the
single pillow talk.
No, I think this is Smokey. No, she was 75. I think this was Smokey Robinson's sister.
Oh, really?
Sylvia Robinson. Mm-hmm.
Oh, still, okay, you said Robinson, okay.
Yeah. Then Patrice O'Neal. Remember the comedian? He was 41. He died in November
29th. Oh, yeah, I heard about him.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And then remember.
The singer, Sylvia, the one who sings, isn't it Pillow Talk? What's that song?
Yeah.
She
her
died
name
too.
Is, she died?
Yes.
She died.
That's what
she
I
died
you were
last year.
About. She died in 2011. That's who I thought you were talking about.
Mm-mm. This one is 75. I think this is Smokey's sister, Sylvia Robinson. Yeah,
but
I didn't know
the
one
song,
who did Pillow
Talk. You know
the talk
song with... I'm talking about? Pillow Talk. I know I'm
right,
not getting
I know.
The right word, but
I
that
know who you're talking
singer,
about.
She died too. She died too.
Wow.
Yep, in the latter half of 2011.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. And Rudolph Dolemite Moore.
Yeah.
Remember him? He was a comedian, more or less. He did a few movies, too.
Dolemite?
Yeah. Dolemite. He's dead. He died November the 28th.
Dolemite?
My daughter said, keep saying Dolemite. Yes. Yeah, but my
now I never saw any of his movies, but and believe it or not, the reason I know about him is when because he was doing some of those black what they call black exploitation movies as well.
But
they did a scene. They did the Players Ball on Martin, and all of the old ones were on there, and Dolemite was on the stage.
And about, do you know about how old he may have been?
I'm not sure.
I know he was up there. I know he had to be quite. I know he was older than me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. Because yeah, all of them. Because he was older than them, like Huggy Bear and Goldie and all, he was older than them even back then.
Right, because I remember him when I was, you know, you know, younger.
And you know, the who is it? The singer from the Blue Magic's dad? The one with the gray hair?
Right, what's his name?
Let
me see if I can pull, because I was...
Didn't one of them from the, what is it, the Spinners? Or the Simpsons? Which one?
Let me see.
Who
was that?
Who was the other one?
I remember.
I can't think of his name for nothing right now.
Right, but I know who you're talking about because
yeah,
I was saying that.
To him, because he was wheelchair bound.
Oh, you're talking about Teddy Pendergrass?
He passed a few years ago. He was before then.
Oh, okay.
But this was the guy, because I always call him the gray head. I'm almost certain that's the one it was, because he had his hair was always shaped up and lined up really good, and he had the gray on his face and on his head. He died in like somewhere, I guess, September, August, somewhere up in there. And they just did a dedication to him. I probably remember him because in 2003, they sang, I worked for Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority back then, and they were the headlining show at our event at their boule. And the Blue Magic was the headlining show. And, you know, I draw. And they sang, and I actually got to see them. That was my first time and last time ever seeing them perform in person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All
wow.
Came, including, what's the one that was separate from them? For some reason, Philip Bailey's in my head, and I know that's the wrong one because he's with Earth, Wind, and Fire. I can't
see him. Yeah, Philip Bailey. Yeah, he's with Earth, Wind, and Fire.
But all of them came and they sang, and I got to see them, you know, sing those songs I grew up on. But
wow.
He passed later in the year, and if I remember correctly, one of the singers from, because I know it wasn't, I thought it was the Temptations or the Spinners.
Mm-hmm.
Passed. And because those two I remember as far as, you know, other, that people didn't talk at the time that he was dying. Well, see, they had just did a, some kind of tribute to him. I don't know whether he was in kidney failure or something, but they had did some kind of tribute to him. And they did a concert with trying to raise these funds. And they had did this, like, within a month, probably a month before he died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I know who you're talking about, but his name is not coming to me.
I can't think of his name right now.
Right. Mm-hmm. I do remember reading that somewhere. I don't know if it was on the internet or in the newspaper, but I do remember someone dying from that group.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, let's talk about some things that happened in 2011. Remember Ted Williams, the guy with the golden voice?
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw him tonight on That's Entertainment, I think, one of those shows that come on. And he's doing very well. He's out in California,
good.
Has his own house, him and his girlfriend. She cleaned up her act, and he has a studio, like, in his house, real nice. You know, they were showing a little bit of it around, but he's doing really good. He finally got off of drugs, and, you know, I guess he's living his life. He said from the streets to Hollywood, so... He's looking good too. He got his mouth fixed up. Nice haircut. I love his haircut. He looks really good, you know.
I'm glad to hear that.
Right, I am too. And I was trying to pull some information up on him on the internet, but it just kept going back to when he was, you know, getting ready to go to rehab, being in rehab,
mm-hmm.
doing this, and, you know, all the negative things they was having,
exactly.
you know. But I know that since then some, you know, positive things had to have come out of that, you know. But they showed him on Entertainment Tonight, and he's doing very well.
Very good.
Yeah, so... That's a very good success story to come out of 2011 because he was just going through it so bad, and how Dr. Phil was pressuring him. Everybody was pressuring this man to go into rehab when he wasn't ready to go into rehab.
Exactly.
He didn't want to go into rehab, but he was doing it because he was being pressured. You know, Dr. Phil, if you don't take this offer today, then we're going to be done with you. You know, so his back was up against the wall, and, you know, I could see the fear in his face, and, you know, he's telling him he just wanted to go back home one last time, but, you know, he really wanted to go home so he can get high again, you know, because he really wasn't ready, and you need to... people who aren't on that end, they don't understand when a person is going through being an addict, a drug addict, you know, because I've been there, done that. You know, my family, everybody, you know, pressured me, you need to go into rehab, you need to do this, you need to do that. True, I needed to, but that wasn't what was going on in my mind. What was going on in my mind was where I was going to get my next high. That's the only thing that was going on in my mind. But then when I hit my rock bottom, I had to take a whole 360-degree turnaround and, you know, just give it up. You know, I just put it in God's hands and told him, you know, I am so sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, I'm just giving it to you. You know, so that's basically how I, you know, overcame my drug habit, you know, because, like, I've been to rehab. That didn't work. Going to those meetings, that didn't work. So, you know, I just gave it to God, so... You know, and, you know, it wasn't like something that happened overnight because I had to work with those prayers, you know,
mm-hmm.
asking him to, you know, deliver me up from this, deliver me up from these drugs and, you know, get me back to where I need to be. And, you know, so as long as he saw that's what I wanted, then, you know, I was delivered from it. And I have not looked back. It's been, I would say now, it's been 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm proud of myself, and I tell anybody that, you know, has an addiction, if man can't help, man, basically, God use people as, you know, use people through him, but obviously, the people that you know, weren't sensible to help me, because going into those meetings, this is just how I look at it. Going into those meetings, if you're supposed to be drug-free, kicking a drug habit, they have people in there smoking cigarettes, and that's addictive, smoking mm-hmm. cigarettes, drinking nicotine and caffeine, you know, cursing and this and that. So that really wasn't the environment that I wanted to be in, you know, because I basically had stopped smoking cigarettes. And, you know, just somebody, just that smoke, it just was so irritating to me, you know. So that wasn't helping me, you know. And then being in rehab, hearing people, you know, how they snuck out and got high and this and that, you know. So it basically was not for me. Not to say that someone else, you know, other people, they can go through rehab and they can quit or whatever, but that just wasn't a thing that was for me, you know. So, like I said, it's been 30 years, and I have not looked back. I have no intentions of going back. And, you know, I'm very glad that God intervened and got me out of that pit. Because being a drug addict, it's no fun. You know, so, I don't know. But, you know, it's just something that you have to do, something that, you know, it's something that you would have to make your mind up to do on your own. You can't let anybody, because I'd be watching intervention. And those people on there, everybody's just pressuring those people to go into rehab and telling them this and telling them. And I know what they're feeling on the inside. I know exactly what they're going through, because you cannot force a person to do something that they don't want to do. And if they do it, they're not doing it for themselves. They're doing it to satisfy you.
And they always
you.
Have
so
a relapse.
Right. That's why they have relapses, because they're mm-hmm. not doing it for themselves. They're doing it because, oh, my mother, I'm breaking my mother's heart, so I'm going to rehab. I'm you know, doing this to my kids, so I'm going. No, you have to. That, when you're addicted to drugs, you have to be very selfish when it comes to your sobriety. You cannot think about, you know, wanting to satisfy this person, satisfy that person. You have to satisfy yourself. So if a person's not thinking like that, and, you know, just doing it because I'm tired of my mother getting on my back, I'm tired of my husband, I'm tired of this, I'm tired. No, what you need to be tired of is those drugs, and get yourself together. So, you know, I'm very proud of Ted Williams, and hopefully he'll, you know, continue to be clean, which I think he will. I really think he will, because he was, you know, his rock bottom, living on the streets and doing whatever he had to do to get money. And then his girlfriend, you know, she was addicted, you know. So both of them are clean. Both of them are happy.
Well, he also needed to get a break from his family.
Yeah, and his family.
Because
they were,
his family, they make you want to take drugs. Hell, I needed to drink
mm-hmm.
after watching what was going on with them. And this is like, especially that daughter of his.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? And I never heard anybody say it like that before, but I can completely understand a statement you just made. When you are when you are going through rehab, you have to be selfish. You have to
yeah.
be only get, and I can totally see that, because you have to become immersed in you.
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
If you know, doing it for somebody else, it's not going to work. It is not going to work.
His name was Wendell Sawyer Jr.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I did hear that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
did
he died.
Hear that.
Yeah, he died March 12th, 2011.
Okay. Wow. Okay, we're going to take a little break and come back, and we're going to continue with 2011, the best and the worst.
dollar names. That's not our problem, that's up to Brenda's family. Well, let me show you how it affects our whole community. Now, Brenda really never knew her moms, and her dad was a junkie putting death into his arms. It's sad, cause I bet Brenda doesn't even know. Just cause you're in the ghetto doesn't mean you can't grow. But oh, that's a book, my own revelation. Do whatever it takes to resist the temptation. Brenda got herself a boyfriend. Her boyfriend was a cousin, now let's watch the joy. And she tried to hide her pregnancy from a family who really didn't care to see or give a damn if she went out and had a church of kids. As long as when the check came, they got first dibs. Now Brenda's belly's getting bigger, but no one seems to notice any change in her figure. She's 12 years old and she's having a baby, in love with a molester who's sexing her crazy. And yet, and also thinks that'll be with her forever, and dreams of a world with the two of them are together. Whatever, he left her and she had the baby solo. She had it on the bathroom floor and didn't know, so she didn't know what to throw away and what to keep. She wrapped the baby up and threw him in a trash heap. I guess she thought she'd get away, wouldn't hear the cries. She didn't realize how much the little baby had an eye. Now the baby's in a trash heap bawling. Mama can't help her, but it hurts to hear her calling. Brenda wants to run away. Mama say you're making me lose pay, and social workers here every day. Now Brenda's gotta make her own way. Can't go to a family, they won't let her stay. No money, no babysitter, she couldn't keep a job. She tried to sell crack, but ends up getting robbed. So now what's next? It ain't nothing left to sell. So she sees sex as a way of leaving hell. It's paying the rent, so she really can't complain. Prostitute fans swing, and Brenda's a name, she's gotta pay.
Brenda's Got a Baby. That's by Tupac. How about that? Mm-hmm. Did you listen to the words of that?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that heavy? 12 years
old. It really is. It reminds me, not as, but it reminds me of SCX by Life Genius.
Mm-hmm.
Because it tells of a similar story.
Right. Well, we have a caller. I'm going to bring this caller in. 214, are you there?
Hello, Gail Delicious. This is Penelope.
Hi.
How you doing?
Hi, Penelope. How are you?
I just had a message. I'm fine. Happy New Year. I had a message to you from Otto. Otto says that you should not put his name in any book. Yeah. He says you don't want to be in your death books. You put your name in a book, and that book is die. No, thank you.
Well, you know, I can't help it. To, I'm going to write a book solely with only his name in it.
Yeah, don't put his name in your book.
So how was your New Year's?
Yes, so far it has been good. We were sick, of course, on New Year's when we rang in the New Year. Everyone here was sick, but we are all fine now. And,
okay.
You know, just kind of looking forward to things and I'm looking up for the rest of the year. But the one thing, I know you all been doing a whole lot of who died in 2011, and you want to know what the best and worst is of 2011, and the best thing for 2011 had to be Occupy Wall Street, the whole Occupy mm-hmm. movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the whole concept of the if people stepping up and finally saying that the 99%, that we realize that 1% of the population basically owns more than all the rest of us combined, and that we want them to become accountable. So I thought that was the best story of the year.
Oh, okay. Well, what about, what's your worst story?
The worst story is that I still have to work for a living. And that's the worst. I did not get rich in 2011. So that is the worst story. That
I
nobody said, oh, now if you won the lottery, you see me picking up one of those big checks, you know, that was the worst story.
Wow. Wow, that's something. Well, my, I don't think it was the worst story, but it was more or less a learning type of experience for me. I was dropped by my publisher. And, you know, things were looking a little bleak for a moment. But then I said to myself, you know what, this counted as a blessing. So that's exactly what I did. And this year, I claimed it as my year because it's going to be a whole lot of changes going on in my life. I'm going to start my own publishing company, number one. And I'm going to be doing some speaking different places locally and maybe out of town. But, you know, this is going to be my year. I claimed it, and that's just how it's going to be. So I can't really say anything, you know, that bad happened in 2011, except for, like, the people that, you know, that I lost personally. And in 2011, a couple of people that were carried into my books were dead a year. And but, you know, everything else has been, you know, kind of subtle, you know,
yeah,
kind of good.
I recall that you also are going to be reviving your career in porn. So your porn film career. You were reviving that this year in 2012.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that movie. Oh, let me tell you about the movie. Now, it's been this year, as a matter of fact, this month, it'll be 4 years that this guy has been working on that movie. And, you know, I just told him a couple of weeks ago he was up here, and I told him, I said, well, you know, I keep asking him, I said, when is the movie going to be out? Well, I asked him before this year got here. He said, well, hopefully before 2012. I said, okay, no problem. Well, it's 2012. I really don't expect to see that movie out to maybe 2000, maybe 2030, something like that. You know, because
you want to see you on the big
screen. Huh?
Want to see you on the big screen doing your thing.
I don't know about all that because, like I said, I don't even know. And then he's talking about getting distributors for this movie. And the only thing, like I had told him a couple of years ago, I said, I can see you selling that film that, you know, out of the trunk of your car because I can't see any distributing company taking it because, number one, he had poor equipment while he was filming it. Then he has a million zillion characters in this movie. And it's just, you know, it's really a crazy movie as far as I'm concerned. But when it gets out and I get my hands on the copies of it, I definitely will be distributing them to, you know, anybody who wants to see them. But, you know, other than that, I don't know. I really don't know. It's just...
Well, you know what? You never know how things are going to hit. Some things are going to build cult classics. You first think you're in it and you think this is, you know, crazy. But people, you never know what resonates with people. So you... It could end up being a big cult classic.
Well, if it does, you know, I can, I guess I just have to sort of like tell him that, you know, I'm sorry, I apologize or whatever, but, you know,
yeah, see, you never know.
It's just the point, and then he doesn't want anybody to help him, you know, to, you know, give him any type of advice on it or anything like that. So, you know, he's doing it by himself.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's not good. Yeah, so
if you don't have anybody to bounce ideas off of, you know, sometimes in your head, things seem like the best thing since sliced bread. And, boy, you go all the way with it, and you turn around and say, what in the world was I thinking?
Mm-hmm.
I remember writing once with a friend of mine, and that's what happened. You know, we're writing, we're going on. And, you know, one part of it told her, you know, I don't think that that's going to work because the main character really should be a lot stronger. This just seemed a little bit silly. But we kept writing, we got in the middle of it, and she went back to the beginning and goes, this is terrible. Why did you tell me?
Wow.
And I told you. And then we had to rewrite it. But she understood what I was saying when I read it the first time. And I said, oh, no, this will never work. So, no, this is the way it's written in the genre, and they do it that way, blah, blah, blah. But even after she read it, she said, oh, God, see what you mean? That's never going to work. But, man, that was years ago we started writing that. We still haven't finished that book. That's a shame.
Well, speaking of books, I'm going to call out some of the authors that me and Rhea had interviewed in 2011. Keith Williams, he wrote Something Brooklyn, Mostly Mars,
mm-hmm.
which was a good book. Dean Jean Perry, I hope I'm pronouncing that right because he got on me. The Pussy Whisperer. Now, that book was really... The Pussy Whisperer. Yeah, now that book, the book itself, if you had this book, the book is so soft, you know, when it makes you just want to hug that book and rub on that book. And he said all his books are going to be like that. He has another book out called Moist. But the Pussy Whisperer was
Moist
a collection.
Moist don't have that same type of cover.
And you know what?
Oh, it doesn't?
And you just say that so just trippingly off the tongue it falls. You know, who knows the Pussy Whisperer? I mean, you might as well think the Mary Collins
book. That CD in here will get you in trouble.
Wow. See,
I didn't get
the CD.
Oh, that's because, you know, he's reading his works from the book. And it's like, shit. Man, I had to step back. Okay, stop.
Wow.
It's nice.
Wow. I'm going to have to get that. Then we had Envy Red, who wrote Touch, and her latest book is Jade. I have to get Jade to find out what Jade was doing because she was in Touch. Then Tori Scott, Love Rescue, he has a book out. What's the name of his recent book, Miss Rhea?
Dr. G's Chronicle.
Oh, okay. All right. Love Rescue
has changed.
Right.
From Dr. G's Chronicle, but that's what it is.
Oh, okay. Then we have the poet, the greatest poet alive. He wrote 24 Orgasms. That book was really nice as well.
It was a
little small book. Then Elizabeth Funderburk, Love Torn Asunder, and she also was an author in Saving Lives Through Lit, and that book was for women who are being abused. And then
not
Michael
women,
Hayes.
There's some men who wrote in that book,
oh,
too.
Oh, right. It was about...
GPA is one of the features in that book as well.
Right. Okay. It was about people being abused and abusive relationships or just being abused. I have to get that book as well. Then Michael Hayes, his book wasn't out at that particular time when he was on the show, but I did get a couple of his poems, and his book is out now. So
okay.
I'm be you know looking forward to that. He's supposed to be sending me a copy of that, and he's going to come back on the show. Then I.B. Freeman, Mr. HIV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a hot interview that night. That was really enlightening one as well.
It really was.
Yeah, and then D.K. Walker, The Ugly Side of Sex. Now that book. Like I said, that you know that book needs to be in, introduced into maybe I would say college age students, you know, so they can really understand what a sex addict is, you know, what they go through and the things they will do to, you know, have sex, because all these stars claiming to be sex addicted,
mm-hmm.
have they ever had sex with a stinky crackhead or, you know. But that book needs to be introduced to so college students can get an idea, you know. Then J.C. Beast and Beast A.D., I'm reading Beast A.D. now, but Beast was really a good book as well. And this Beast A.D. to me is it's much better than the first book. You know, not to take anything from the first book. The first book was good, but Beast A.D. is, you know, with Beast coming back and, you know, doing his thing. And
he even said that.
Huh?
He even said that.
Right. And
that A.D. was better, yeah.
Uh-huh, what Jazzy went through, you know, it's really good. And then we had Soimmetry, the scenario, her and the Ebony Poet put that together, and that was really good. You know how they did that? You know, he's
that
on one side of the...
Yes,
he's
so
in one place
fun.
And she's in another place, and they just writing it like that, and I thought maybe they had gotten together to do that, but that was really good.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. And the two of them have never physically met.
Right, that's what
and
I found out.
Talk, like, general, like, friends and this, that, and the other. They don't... They did that. They their only communication when they were writing that was that piece.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, that's
And then we had Antoine T. Money, which is a local actor here in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. His film debut came out last year, and I think it was July, The Right to Remain Silent. That movie was on the big screen, and Antoine T. Money, the first time I saw him was when Lamont was doing a, you know, trying to get a TV series together called The Laws of the Streets. Yeah,
okay.
Laws of the Streets. And I, you know, I saw him in that, then I saw him in, you know, a couple of plays, and then he, you know, said he was, because we had him on Lamont's show, he said he was getting ready to, you know, be in a movie and it was going to be on a big screen, so we discussed that. I went to see that movie, and I'm telling you, it was the bomb. I mean, this guy is nothing but the truth. He is nothing but the truth. And he's now with a company who's doing an online online series, Dirtier Than Ever, and another one that he's in is called Turning the Tables. And Turning the Tables is about these women because he's just so bad in this movie. And these women are, you know, seeking, you know, going to get revenge on him for, you know, what he's doing to his women, you know, just meeting them and, you know, taking advantage of them. And, you know, so that's going to be really good. I can't wait to, you know, I think it's up to part 4 or 5. But if you go to Antoine's Facebook page, you can, you know, you can catch up on what he's doing. And also, you know, you can see those clips of the movies that he's in. He's also going to be doing a movie with The Rock, who, what's his name, Charles Dudding. He's doing a movie with, what's the guy's name? The one, no, that's a daggone shame. I could see him in my, the guy who played on, played in the movie Idlewild. Did you see Idlewild?
Mm-hmm.
Terrence Howard. That's, yeah, he's doing a movie with Terrence Howard. He's doing a movie with the girl who played in Family Matters, Elise.
Mm.
I think her name is Elise something. But yeah, he's
younger
very,
girl.
The one who played in the series that came on with All in One, the one with Jada Pinkett and Will Smith produced.
Lisa Ray?
No, not Lisa Ray, the other girl who's Dwayne's girlfriend.
Oh, I know you're talking. Okay, Elise. Okay.
Yeah, Elise. I can't think of her last name, but yeah.
You're right. Okay.
Right.
When you said Family Matters, I was thinking of that young girl because I'm like, she was in porn. I thought she was doing
no,
porn.
Not her. No, not her. No, the one who Urkel was, the one who
exactly.
Urkel was so crazy about her.
Okay.
Yeah. But he's doing, you know, movies here, there, and, you know, just doing his thing, you know. And he's going to be back on the show once, you know, I get the movie so I can send it to you so you can see it, and because I've seen it, so we can interview him about that and, you know, ask him what he's been up to and, you know, this and that. But that's you know, what's been going on our show. And I think the best show that I had, the most ratings on the best show I had last year was When the Next Level was on. Remember him, Rhea?
I remember the name.
Yeah. He's a spoken word artist, and I think he lives in Dallas, Texas, somewhere like that. But he has a very
excuse me. I remember the name, and then when you got to talking, I also remember him from another show I was on. Okay.
Right. Yeah, so he has that voice that just, ooh, it hypnotizes you. But, yeah, so I got the most ratings on that show and the most ratings on Smokey Robinson's birthday party.
Okay.
You know,
oh, my God.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of people trying to hit up on my man.
Monkey Ride. Oh.
But you
yeah,
know what was another interesting show that you did?
All
the one
they did.
We had.
Well, all everybody did come in and listen in on you acting the fool. That's all.
The guy you had on that was the show, I think the topic of the show was S&M B&D.
Oh, you talking
remember
about
that show?
What's his name? Oh my goodness, Master
that
Jet.
Yes, that was interesting. That was an interesting show.
Yeah, Master Jet. He'll
sorry.
Give you a show.
I'm sorry. That's not as interesting as looking at a paint dry. I have never heard anybody make sex seem so unappealing.
Well, you know what, Penelope, that's because he's whole different, because he's in a different category than what you and myself are in. He's in that life, you know, he's doing.
I know he's in the lifestyle. I know he's in the lifestyle, but boy, you could try to make it seem a little bit exciting. Things like
well,
reading
no, see, I'm an information gatherer. So when he was talking, and just, you know, listening, that was a learning experience for me that night, because I was like, ooh, okay. And I learned some things that night, things that I just, the technical part of it, I put it like that.
Yeah, well,
yeah, but it's
sure.
More exciting. Come on. I mean, it just made it seem like going to the dentist, you know. I don't want things to be more exciting. So, man, I got into that show. I said, boy, this is going to be great. You know, we're going to hear all this stuff and things. And it's kind of like, and then.
Penelope, you should have called in and beefed that show up.
I called in and I was going to, but my gosh, I'm like, okay. I'm gonna
no, you should have called in and beefed it up.
Mm-hmm. Man, he could have sat there and read the telephone book and it would have been more exciting, okay?
Well, you know. Some people got something out of it, and some people didn't. But, you know, it was very interesting to me because
I'm not saying that the information was bad. I'm just saying that
she's saying the presentation could have been more hyper.
Thank you.
More involved.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess it's because of the way he does his little presentations, you know, so serious and
matter-of-factly. It's like boom, 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 boom. Except when he got
that
first, they're trying to convince me to try something, to try this. Well, real, wouldn't you be considered trying? No.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's been. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I've learned a few things myself as far as you know, S&M and all that kind of crazy stuff. But, you know, I guess, you know, somebody who's in the lifestyle, it's like second nature to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have to get into consideration. To him, it's old hat, and, you know, and he's just, you know, playing the thing that is, and he's not in it to titillate. He's just there to educate.
Right.
Exactly.
So that's basically how he gets his point across. He just, because he I think he did say something about he had classes where he could, where he, you know, taught these different things. And he goes to different places and have like, you know, he has like gatherings of people who are in that lifestyle, and they maybe will take a trip to Jamaica, and, you know, they'll do their thing down there, or, you know, to the Virgin Islands or somewhere like that, you know. And then he sponsors different events and, you know, things like that. So I guess if, you know, if that's what makes his boat float, I'm happy for him, but I'm kind of a selfish lover. I can't share my man with you know, I am, because I just couldn't I just couldn't, you know. I'm just selfish like that. You know?
I agree. Yeah, I think it's okay for me, but not for him.
But now I could watch it all day, you know. I am a voyeur. I'm not gonna lie. I am a voyeur, and I'm quite sure that most women are voyeurs, you know, because we like to watch, we like to see things. But I couldn't. I really don't think I could participate. I really don't. But, you know, I'm not knocking what anybody do, because if that's what you do, you like it, I love it. You know, yeah. So, were there any other shows that you particularly like, Rhea, or Penelope, that you heard?
You know, it's just, when you ask, it's hard to separate out. You know, the different shows. I think, I know you all, and it's hard because you have your show, Delicious Talk, but you're also doing the Chocolate Coffee show as well. So it's hard for me to separate which one from which, since basically you were doing both.
Right. Well, I stopped doing Chocolate Coffee. I can't even remember the last time I was on Chocolate Coffee. You know, that's been, for real, I can't remember the last time I was on Chocolate. I think the last time I was on there was my last year's, in 2010, my birthday.
I thought it was a birthday show, but that was 2010, so yeah, I think that would be the last one, I think. I remember. So anything else I remember is probably going to be your show. I don't know, because, you know, you basically kind of drive the train on the show, and it's always good, and, you know, and it's fun. So I don't know. I can't think of anything except for that, you know, the paint dry guy that you know.
You know, I'm thinking about having him back on, but I have to give him a call and find out what we're going to talk about. I also want to get I know you guys may have seen her somewhere on the internet or heard this lady. Her name is, oh my goodness, it left me that quick. But anyway, she's the one who does the vagina power things.
Girl.
Do you know her name, Rhea?
Alyssa, come on, it's right here. Oh, Lord, I know who you're talking about.
Right, she does the
vagina. That would be an interesting show. Ooh, Lord.
Right, I'm thinking about, you know, trying to get her to do a show as well, because she's hilarious.
She is hilarious, but
she's serious.
Do that woman have
too.
Mental issues?
Huh?
Do that woman have mental issues, though?
But see, you know, it just seems
what?
That.
I mean, I never heard of her.
I don't
know. Never
oh,
heard
my
of her?
Goodness. Okay, but no. I need to get you. You need to see some of her. Because have you noticed that when she gets into her dialogue, if you look
uh-huh.
at her ass, this woman goes
uh-huh.
somewhere else.
Yep. And her mother be sitting right there.
And where do you find this online?
You know what? I'm going to tell you something. Penelope talking about the paint drying on that other show, she wouldn't be talking about
mm-hmm.
no damn paint drying on those shows. Penelope
mm-hmm.
probably would be getting up off the floor laughing so hard. Because when she talk about the power of the pussy and the pussy and the power, oh,
okay.
my God.
Okay.
Yeah, she gets it out there.
No, she really, right, she goes somewhere. Because if you watch the video, if you watch her videos, after she, like, I guess after maybe the first three or four minutes, all you got to do is look at her face and look at her ass. This woman is transported somewhere, and she really gets, and she gets talking fast, and she gets going in, and you would think she hate men. It is hilarious.
Yes, she's definitely that. So I'm thinking about, you know, trying to get her to do
a
show.
Oh, wow, that would be a good show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All
yeah,
right. I'm in.
No,
yeah,
are you on Facebook?
Yes, I am.
Okay, friend me because I want to send you a couple of her videos.
All right, I'm for it.
So you can see it, and seriously, you'll see what I mean. And in some ways, I can understand what this, but she gets so into it. It's like, where the hell is she at? You sitting there looking at her, like, oh my God. You're going to watch them twice, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. Because one time you're going to be listening to what she's saying, and the other time you're going to be looking at her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh.
Really?
You, huh? If
is
you
that wild?
Yeah, if you cut the volume down and just watch her, the animation and the emotions and stuff that's going across her face, you're like, where is this woman at? It's like she's not even
mm-hmm.
sitting there in the interview no more.
But she's serious about what she be saying.
Oh, she's serious. Oh, she's serious. She's serious as all heck. She toured as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Well,
like,
we're going to take another musical break, and we'll be right back.
Oh.
Oh, not this song.
Yes. They put y'all on this rock, please.
I haven't heard this song in forever.
Hello.
Barbara.
Barbara Shirley. You might not know who I am, but the reason I'm calling you is because I was going through my old man's pockets this morning, and I just happened to find your name and number. So woman to woman, I don't think it's being any more than fair than to call you and let you know where I'm coming from. Now, Barbara, I don't know how you're going to take this, but whether you be cool or come out of a bag on me, you see, it really doesn't make any difference. But it's only fair that I let you know that the man you're in love with, he's mine. From the top of his head to the bottom of his feet, the bed he sleeps in, and every piece of food he eats. You see, I make it possible. The clothes on his back, I buy them. The car he drives, I pay the note every month. So I'm telling you these things to let you know how much I love that man. And woman to woman, I think you'll understand just how much I'll do to keep him. Woman to woman, if you've ever been in love, then you know how I feel. And woman to woman, now if you were in my shoes, wouldn't you have done the same thing too? Can't you see where I'm coming?
Betty Wright, Woman to Woman. She's taking care of that man. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we're back with the best and the worst of 2011. If anybody out there got a story they want to share, feel free to call in. The call-in number is 646-652-2877. Again, that number is 646-652-2877. And I'm here with my co-host, Rhea, and Penelope Flynn.
Full disclosure, I thought that was Gotta Find Me an Angel by Aretha Franklin.
No.
I didn't hear him say nothing about an angel.
I'm serious. I read it, and then when she got to come on, I'm like, oh, this song.
Yeah. Yeah. This song.
Well, now you know. Yeah. So what about the show Grab and Dash? I've been seeing a lot of that going on. It's even here.
Yeah.
You know,
that
was something watching,
got dead in Chicago. They're doing it like the younger people, the teens
mm-hmm.
are doing it in gangs.
Mm-hmm.
And they go gangs of 30 of them. And they'll go in and they'll go into some of these finer stores up on North Michigan Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And they grabbing and running out the store. And it's so many of them, who do you chase? And
yeah.
And they almost always get away. And then they're also doing it with people who walking down the street on their iPhones.
Mm.
And they're, like, you know, computer bags and stuff like that. It's gotten really, really bad here.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I just grabbed the first one I get my hands on. And I hear some people say, you should share the rest of this with your friends.
Wow, it's really bad when.
I only need one. I just give me one of them. And I give somebody else. And you pass this share on to them.
Yeah, because a mother has seen her two kids on there and turned them in. That she did the right thing.
Yeah, because I know here there's been one death. This lady was going down the L stairs, but this was just a grab and dash. This wasn't that group thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy
and they knocked her down
the L stairs, and she died. And she was a very noted, prominent lady in the. You know, wherever the area she was in,
mm-hmm.
and as a she was a philanthropist out there, and when she died, it's like they started taking it serious,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I was like, wow, but that's something that has really it's really gotten out of hand here.
Wow, it's really sad when it comes down to people robbing. You know, I mean. Even if it's for survival, I just can't understand somebody just, you know, taking that as a sport, you know, just doing it out of just being mischief. Okay, come on, y'all, let's go down here and let's go in this store and take any and everything out of here that we want. Don't they realize that they are basically putting themselves in a bad situation because that mm-hmm. little store, a lot of people may have depended on it, and the next thing you know, it has to close.
Yep.
You know, so these teenagers, they need to, you know, get it together and, you know, because people talking about they're our future. They're not the ones that are our future. Those ones that are out there doing this and acting like natural-born fools, they are not our future.
Yeah.
Because, number one, they're not going to be around long enough to do anything in the future if they keep carrying on the way that they're carrying on.
Yeah. One of them, like I said, the snatching of the cell phones and stuff like that, it became very popular. So what they would do, they would sit back and they would watch people, you know, as you're using your phone. And when you would use the iPhone, they would follow you down the street or whatever, and then they would attack you. Well, they had gotten really bad, and, like, they strategically planted where you're, like, going down some stairs or you're doing this. Well, this one guy did it on the L, and he, our train, and he ran into a Xboxer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That man whooped up on him so bad he dropped everything and ran. And ran into a restaurant that was a noted restaurant.
Help him, huh?
he hid in a place where they couldn't see him, and they followed the blood. And
that's what he gets.
That Xboxer, he whooped up on him, and I'm like, you know what? That's what he gets. He's lucky to be alive.
Because you never know. You never know. Who are you going to run into? Somebody, you think you're going to go rob somebody. Next thing you know, they cracking your skull open.
Exactly.
Because some of these store owners are not going to take it, you know. They're going to pull out their gun while you got your gun on. You might not make it out. So, you know, these people need to think before they do something crazy. You know, it's just so sad. And then who was that, Newt Gingrich? Talking about give people, they should be trying to get paychecks instead of food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
That was the most ignorant remark that I ever heard in my life.
Because he's playing to, he's from Georgia, and he's playing to a certain audience. He doesn't care what it is that black people think, because we're not his audience.
Mm-hmm.
They always know that they can, in front of that particular audience, they can use black people as a punching bag. And we're not there to respond or to say that's incorrect. So, you know, he let him play to his little crowd and say his little thing and just don't get sucked into it. You know, I think that NAACP or any black organization should make certain not to invite him anywhere, because he shouldn't be. You know, he's just, and he doesn't get to use us as a prop, you know, in his campaign. So I don't even want to give him any type of credence whatsoever.
Right, right.
He's a black people's prop.
Right.
I know we don't talk politics, but let me just briefly say this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of my issues with Republicans is this. If you said it like it was, I could deal with that. If you told the truth, I could deal with that. But when you take that and spin it, it's like, some of them still will sit back and say, what a great President Bush was. You can't even tell the truth. You know, you have no foundation that you're built on, because you're built on lies. And that's the problem I have. If Newt Gingrich had said that and had his facts right, well, then he wouldn't have said it, because most people would know that other people get a lot more than we get. And we're only 13% of it. So it's like, really? 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 You know, if you're going to say it, at least get your facts right.
Yep.
Exactly. Exactly.
Tell the truth. Yeah, so it's a crazy world out here, really crazy, and I just don't, you know, I know that, you know, people feel that things are getting better and they're going to get better, but I can't really see that.
But you know
Come on, be optimistic.
Oh, I
can be optimistic now, but as far as like things.
But you know, I've seen improvement. I've seen things a little bit that has changed here and there. Okay, fine. But I know this is bad, but it's almost like I'd rather hear it coming out of their mouth than coming out of Howard Kane's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. To hear some of the things that they're saying, it's like y'all don't know no better. y'all, you know, you did that and other, but to hear it coming out of a black man's mouth, it just did something to me.
Herman Cain.
Yeah. It just did something to me.
He's a character. He's a character. But
it was funny when he finally admitted that he was paying this woman when the money started talking, because we all mm-hmm. know why she came forward, because the money stopped.
Mm-hmm.
When the money started talking, and he came forward and said, "That's a good friend of mine, and I have been helping her out for years." You've been helping out a good friend of yours for 13 years, and your wife didn't know it?
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the problem.
Okay. Whatever you say. Wow.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't even a man enough to admit
exactly.
what he did was
exactly.
wrong. You know, be a man and admit
exactly.
it and bow down. You know, that's
and
all
then,
he had
then,
to do.
But you know what's going to happen next? He's going to be noted as a sex addict, and he's going to go into rehab.
Oh, please. like I said, they need to get that book, The Ugly Side of Sex, and then, you know, come back and say what you are.
And
no, you're not a sex addict.
That's why I brought up the questions that I brought up when we were on that show, because
mm-hmm.
out of everybody who actually claim it, I give a good 90% of it ain't nothing but a cop-out for you to cover up.
That's
out here
it. For them cheating,
they
want to cover up the fact that they're cheaters, right. So that first thing they call, I'm a sex addict.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whatever. Like I said, all of them need to have that book, because I even learned some things, you know, as far as a person saying they're addicted to sex, you know. But just like Halle Berry's Eric Benet, he
mm-hmm.
he was a sex addict. Sandra Bullock's husband, he's a sex addict. But check out the women that they was with.
Yep.
And Tiger Woods, sex addict, my butt, please. But
why? You don't think so?
What,
no,
they were sex addicts?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Uh-uh. I think that if you read that book, Penelope, you would have a whole different perspective of what a sex addict, you know, you would have a whole different perspective than what you have now about thinking that Eric Benet and all them were sex addicts.
Is Kobe
going to
be the next
that
one?
Book.
But they're just
huh?
cheaters. They were just cheaters.
Is Kobe going to be the next one?
They were
one?
Just cheaters.
Yeah, just cheaters.
Yeah.
Is that how he's going to keep Vanessa? Because he's going to come out that he's at, you know, he's a sex addict?
Who?
Kobe Bryant.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
You know that's what he's going to say.
Mm-hmm.
That's their cop-out. Instead of them
that's
just admitting, yeah, I cheated on you. I'm a cheater. I mean, you know, get it out there. You cheated. You're a cheater.
Just own it. I'm like, yeah, all right. Well, okay, whatever. That's why, like I said on that show, I'm not saying that I don't believe that it could possibly exist, but I'm going to tell you that majority plus of the people who could make that claim
mm-hmm.
ain't nothing but hoes, and they got caught.
Yeah, yeah. And they just don't want to admit the fact that they are cheaters.
Exactly.
And I can't understand why, because if you're going to claim to be a sex addict and going through what is in that book, I'd rather be called a cheater.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah.
Cause
I mean,
you
seriously.
Have no control. No, if you're a true addict, you have no control over it. So that
right.
means you're going to do it with anything.
Yeah,
anybody. You know, it's like, okay, come on now. Come on. All
anytime.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, okay. And it is going to interfere with your job. And
mm-hmm.
it is going to interfere with you functioning. Okay? Because addicts don't have control over when they're a drug addict.
That's true. The only thing you're thinking about is that next hit.
Exactly.
That's it, and that's all.
Exactly. Now, you may start off in the beginning thinking you can control it,
mm-hmm.
and you thinking that, but then it catches up with you, and it takes over, and it rules, because that becomes the ruler of your life. So if your sex is not like that, then come on now. There's no selectivity in there, nowhere whatsoever. And I know I just made up a word, but there's none in there. And that's my concern. When we were talking, it's like, no. And to this day, it's so funny because we play words with friends all the time. Mm-hmm. And every now and then, he'll say, you got another question to ask me? And I'll say, no. He said, you just don't believe it, till you. I said, no. Mm-hmm. Nope. Now, if you tell me that you're medicated, no, did a doctor prescribe this to, and tell you, is there a medication? Is there this, that, and the other? It's a different story. I'm open enough to realize the possibility that there may be somebody out there that is a sex addict. But mm-hmm. I know majority of those we see ain't.
Yep. They sure ain't. They definitely are not sex addicts.
But he
like
always
I said.
He always makes a good his that's always a good show because if you get somebody that's actually going to talk on the topic and he's so open and so mm-hmm. engaged and it's like he will ask he's ask your question. I will ask it.
Mhm. Yeah, so I don't know. People need to do a self-evaluation before they come running talking about I was addicted to sex. Mm-mm. Not.
They had a headline earlier this week.
Huh?
With Kobe said, I'm going to save my family. I'm going to keep my family. And as soon as they said that, I said, what are they going to do, come out and say he's a sex addict? Yeah.
He going to save his
lot of things. Hopefully she ain't that damn stupid.
Right.
Because, and I'm going to tell you why. She waited to that 10-year mark, didn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep.
So ready.
Well, we're getting down to the last 3 minutes of the show, and I want to put out there to people who don't know who I am, I'm an author, a poet, and soon to be publisher.
Mm-hmm.
I have 4 books under my belt, working on my 5th and 6th book. I'm also thinking about putting out a CD, excuse me, and I'm in a movie. As soon as it come out, trust me, I might even put it on on YouTube for everybody to see. But those are the things that are going on in my life right now.
Didn't you leave a title out of there that you've been carrying around lately?
What?
Or you released that one?
What one?
Not sex therapist. What is the title you have?
Oh, romance consultant.
Okay, then. I knew it was another title there that came.
I'm sorry. Yes, a romance consultant.
Now,
sorry
is your
about
CD
that.
Going to be like what you did on Real Talk with Pasha B? When you read from your work, is that what your CD, you're talking about your CD being what you read, like when you read on her show?
Well, it's probably going to be some poetry, you know, a poem, one of my poems, like My Heartbeat or something like that.
That would be nice, because you definitely
mm-hmm.
have a voice for it.
Thank you. Thank you. So, do you have any closing remarks? We got 1 minute, 34 seconds. Go.
Thank you very much. Nice meeting you, Penelope.
Yeah, nice meeting you too. And don't forget to friend me on Facebook.
I will not, and I will not forget. And I was looking up the video, and a whole bunch of other stuff came up. But I'm gonna make sure you at least see. I'm gonna tag you when I see you the one. The other ones after the one plays, the other ones will come up if you want to see the rest of them.
All right. So
and then you can give me your opinion of it.
Okay, I will. You think I won't, but I will.
Okay. So I am glad to be back. You know, we'll be
Yay.
Back next week with a different topic. Yeah, so we can maybe get this show off the ground. And Penelope and Rhea, I'm going to speak to you girls about, because I know that, Penelope, we already talked about the variety show. And I did touch on a little bit with you, Rhea, but, you know, when we get everything down packed, you know, we'll get together and, you know, we're going to start a variety show.
Okay,
so
okay.
With that being said, you guys have a beautiful night. Love you. And see you next. Penelope, I'm going to give you a call, okay?
All right.
Okay, and you all have a wonderful weekend. All right.
You too, hon. Good
okay.
night.
Good night.
Good night.
good night, everybody.